You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If watching is more your thing, don't worry. We've got you covered here at Civic Media. You can always watch our fine programs on Civic Media's YouTube channel. You can also go to Instagram, X, and Facebook, search at Maggie Dawn Show. You can watch us there. And I do mean us to start off the show this afternoon. I am joined by my regular Thursday co-host, Tom Paulsiewicz, a two-time congressional candidate, a Navy vet, small business owner, and all-around reasonable man. Tom and I are joined to kick off this afternoon's episode by Professor Charles Franklin of Marquette University Law School, because we've got a new poll, everybody, and we shall discuss. If you've got questions or comments, 855-755-4842. Welcome, Tom. Welcome, Professor Franklin. Thank you both for making time this afternoon. Let's just jump right in. Professor Franklin, what is the top line headline, in your opinion, from this most recent poll?
I think the top line for me is that voters really have not learned as much as they need to know about the candidates for the state Supreme Court and for the State Department of Public Instruction, the state school superintendent. Overall, we've got 4 weeks to go, so that's a while, but 38% didn't know enough to have an opinion about Brad Schimmel. 58% no opinion about his opponent, Susan Crawford. Jill Underley, the incumbent at the schools, 64% don't know her, and 71% don't know her opponent, Kenzer. Now, those numbers will come down as we get to the election. But the point I wanted to make from this poll is that voters are pretty concerned about the Supreme Court race. They say they care about it. About 50% care about it a lot. And about 80% say that it will determine the balance on the court. They just don't know that much about the candidates.
It's fascinating, Professor. Do you think that this may be just election fatigue? People aren't interested, or if they're interested, they don't want to actually take affirmative steps to figure out more. What do you think is operating here?
I think, honestly, it is a slow process for voters to really get to know the candidates in spring elections. Plus, this year, we did not have a primary in February for the Supreme Court, whereas in 2023, we had a four-way hot contest there. So I think the court is off to a slower start because of that. But we were in the field beginning the day after the primary for the school superintendent. All three candidates were in that. These two candidates that won that. And yet they're the least known, less known than the Supreme Court. Now, in fairness, the school superintendent race has been a much less hot race than the Supreme Court is. So it's certainly sensible that they would be less known. And again, 4 weeks to go, but there's still a lot to learn. And whether it's the Supreme Court or the school superintendent race.
Professor, just one more compound follow-up question, I guess I've got for you. And the first part of this follow-up question to you is, one of the things when I hear this that worries me, frankly, is that voters, where they don't know a lot of information this close to an election of potentially this import for the state, especially on the Supreme Court end, that the odds that, frankly, campaign spending, ad buys, may impact the election go up. Was there anything in your survey, Professor Franklin, that indicated how people are getting information when they don't know a lot about candidates, or in prior surveys, to give us some insight here? Because this is the corrupting influence in politics that so many of us, by vast majorities, no matter what party we may affiliate with, don't like very much.
Yeah, there is a mix of things. First of all, we don't ask specifically, where are you getting your information? But about 38% said they'd read or heard a lot about the Supreme Court race. But it was less than half of that had read or heard a lot about the school superintendent race. I think that makes perfectly good sense, and it lines up with people knowing less about the school candidates. We did ask a question about money in politics and whether both parties have been contributing a lot to court candidates for the last several cycles. And we asked, did this help people understand what those candidates stood for? Or did it make those judges less independent of politics? And actually, across all parties, people say that makes the judges less independent from politics. So that's not directly to how are they learning about it, but it does go to the point that these races are spending records of amounts after in 2023, we shattered the previous records. It's important to get to know these folks, and the respondents tell us they want to know where the candidates stand on issues, but at the same time, they're not entirely thrilled with the purely partisan nature of these so-called nonpartisan races.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've got a couple of quick questions for you. One, though, starting point for me is it seems like Wisconsin voters have forgotten who Brad Schimmel is. You know, when I was reading the actual numbers, I was like, wait a minute. I don't understand how so many people cannot know who he is after he had actually been elected. He's been around for a while. Do you have any insight into that? I don't know if you had a chance to go back and look at previous numbers.
Well, because Schimmel had been attorney general, we had asked about him before. And the truth of the matter is about 40% didn't have a good idea about him when he was still the attorney general. Now, that's a function of the office. When we've asked about Josh Call, the current attorney general, we see similarly high rates of people without opinion. So I don't think it's particular to Schimmel. The fact that he has run statewide probably does help that he's the best known of these four candidates, but still 38% without an opinion of him is still a pretty high number for a former attorney general.
Yeah, I thought so too. And the other part I thought was interesting was his favorability, unfavorability ratings were so much higher than Judge Crawford's. And that just meant that he probably was more visible to people than she is.
It's very much the percent of don't knows that we're seeing here or haven't heard enough. Schimmel is in the whole registered voters, 3 points more unfavorable than favorable, but Crawford is 4 points more unfavorable than favorable, hardly any difference between them. When we narrow the sample down to the people we think are most likely to actually vote and who are paying the most attention, then the don't knows goes down, and Schimmel is 1 point more unfavorable than favorable. Crawford is 1 point more favorable than unfavorable. So again, almost no difference between
them.
It is kind of notable that so many of politicians have substantially net negative ratings, that both of these are basically even, at dead even, at equal fave and unfave.
Interesting.
Quite fascinating. We've got a caller on the line, Professor Jeff from Superior. Say greetings to Professor Franklin and my co-host Tom this afternoon. What's your question or comment, Jeff?
Hi, yeah, I'm from Superior, and I'm curious with regard to the Marquette polls on this and other Marquette polls. How much do you reach into northern Wisconsin north of Highway 29? I mean, sometimes I think these polls are way out of touch with the people of northern Wisconsin.
Thanks, Jeff. Professor?
Yeah, we sample proportionately across the whole state. We actually divide the state into 90 different small regions. and make sure that we're getting the right proportion of people from all 90 of those regions. And that absolutely includes the north of the state. Now, of course, proportionately, fewer people live in the north of the state than in the south and southeast. So, but that's representing the state proportionately. And as much as we can do with those 90 different subregions, representing people well within the subregions as well.
Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're joined this afternoon by Marquette University Law School pollster and professor Charles Franklin, as well as my co-host on Thursday, Tom Paulsiewicz. Let's get into the polls results relating to Donald Trump's second term. What did you learn there, Charles?
Yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff there now, 6 weeks into his administration when we did the poll. Overall, 48% approve, 51% disapprove. So that's similar to national polling at this point. But the polarization by party is gigantic. 92% of Republicans approve of what he's doing. 97% of Democrats disapprove. And among independents, 39% approve, 60% disapprove. So on balance, he's slightly better now than he was at the beginning of his first term in 2017. But the parties are even more polarized now than they were in March of 2017 when we polled about him for the first time then.
A sad moment, in a way, watching that increasing polarization. Notably, Professor, was this poll in the field before? Did it include a period of time with the now very infamous meeting in the Oval Office with President Volodymyr Zelensky and Donald Trump and J.D. Vance?
No, we were essentially finished with the survey before that took place. So doesn't include that. Also doesn't, of course, include this week's tariff decisions either.
Notable that it always is very important when you're looking at polls to know when the poll was in the field, because there is just such a fire hose of change and news on a near daily basis. We're going to have to take care of a little bit of business. When we come back, my co-host is going to ask a question of Professor Franklin. If you have a question for Wisconsin's preeminent pollster, Marquette University law professor Charles Franklin, feel free to call or text that in at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. What does Wisconsin think of Elon and Doge? And so much more when we come back. You're going to want to keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Friday Eve, and that means you're just a wee bit more than 24 hours away from yet another segment called Ask Maggie, where you can ask me anything you would like. If you have a question for me, please send that in at our text line, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or feel free to email in your questions at askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. And don't forget why this is a fun little bit that we do, because I'm supposed to answer your questions in 30 seconds or less, or 60 seconds or less. And if you've been listening to me for more than just today, you know that that is indeed a challenge for me. And especially because of that, and because I need to talk less, I've got two fabulous gentlemen joining me for this first half hour of the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon. My special Thursday co-host, Tom Paulswitz, and he and I are joined by Marquette University law professor and pollster Charles Franklin. Again, gentlemen, thank you for being here. Tom?
Our pleasure. Yeah, Professor Franklin, it's very curious because not only your poll, but a whole bunch of polls in the last 3 or 4 weeks show that President Trump's favorability, unfavorability rating is pretty much locked in. But when you drill down into what he's doing, it seems to be very unfavorable. Do you have like any insight into that or any way to get at that more through polling?
Yeah, we see a couple of things on specific questions about things he's doing. Some are a little more popular, some are less popular. But almost everything we ask about has a majority of Republicans supporting the president's actions. And so that's one thing that holds up his overall approval and provides some support on these policies is support from his GOP base. But let me give you some examples. We asked, does the president have the authority to freeze spending and close agencies? Or is this beyond the president's power and he needs congressional approval to do it? Only 40% said he has that authority. 59% said he needs congressional approval. However, with Republicans, 74% believe it's within the president's power to freeze spending and close agencies. And this week, of course, tariffs has been very much in the news. Only 32% in Wisconsin say tariffs help the economy. 51% say they hurt the economy. 16% say they don't know, or rather that they don't have much effect either way. But again, among Republicans, a solid majority, 61%, think tariffs will help the economy. On the other hand, 50% of independents and 92% of Democrats think they hurt the economy. So there are two examples where the closures, which have strong Republican support, and tariffs, which are a bit less Republican support. Both of those over the whole population are bad for President Trump, hurting his standings.
It's fascinating to me, Professor, that while nearly three quarters of Republicans may believe that a president has the right to shut our departments without congressional approval, that says nothing about the fact of that matter, which Tom and I will discuss a little bit later on this afternoon. I wanted to ask you about independents, Professor, because it is where all of the action is, independents and swing voters. What did your poll tell us about the opinions now these 4 weeks in, when your poll was in the field, 4 weeks into President Trump's second term? How are independents feeling?
Yeah, and they are fairly negative about Trump. Independents in Wisconsin make up about 13% of registered voters. So it's not a huge group, but of course, as close as our elections are, they're very important. And independents lean towards Trump in the fall, so that's also important. But in terms of simple job approval, 39% approve, 60% disapprove. And compare that to March of 2017, when it was 42% approve, 32% disapprove. So he was a net plus 10 in 2017. He's a net minus, 21 now. And when we go through these policy issues on most of the policies, not all, but most, independents disagree with Trump's positions rather than support them.
Absolutely a fascinating swing comparing the same time in Trump's second term as opposed to the same time in Trump's first term. That is a nearly 30-point difference or swing from how independents were viewing him in the first term versus this, and now solidly net negative to the tune of 21 points. Tom, let's find out more about Elon, shall we?
Yeah, the question is you polled on Elon Musk's favorability, unfavorability rating. Any insight into the results that came back from that question?
Yeah, he's solidly net negative, 41 favorable, 53 unfavorable. 6% say they don't know enough about Musk to have an opinion of him. And again, if we come back to the party gap, 81% of Republicans are favorable to Musk, but 58% of independents unfavorable and 97% of Democrats unfavorable. So we see here again this huge party polarization, and we see independents very negative, 29 favorable, 58 unfavorable.
Yeah, and that just shows the like the swing state that we are. I guess one question I'd love to see answered at some point is if you are a Trump only voter, so if you go to the polls only when Trump's on the ballot, what is your level of excitement to vote in these other elections? Because we've seen huge swings in people voting in the Trump elections versus the non-Trump elections. Have you ever thought about asking that question?
We have thought about it, and we've looked at the actual voter file, which is whether people really voted or not, not what they told us in the poll.
Exactly.
We found 20% who voted in 2020 and voted in 2020. I'm sorry, I misspoke. 2020. They voted in the fall election last year for president, and they also voted in the midterm election in 2022. But they did not vote in the spring election in 2023. And that made up 20% of registered voters in the state.
Wow. Yep.
That's an important group, whether they turn out or don't turn out. But it's a group that, well, they did vote in the midterm, so Trump wasn't on the ballot then. But for our April 1st turnout, that's the issue. In 23, we set a record for turnout with about 50% of registered voters voting. But in 2024, last November, it was 88%.
We shall see. Let's watch this April. Thank you, Professor Charles Franklin. Folks, I've got Tom Paulswith sticking around with me. You're going to want to stick around, too. We're going to dig into those tariffs when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can take Civic Media with you wherever you go by downloading the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. It is free, and we are crystal clear when we are transmitting over the app. I come to you from 540 AM WAUK in southeastern Wisconsin, but that is a sure way to be able to hear me wherever you may be in the state. And to hear on Thursdays, my fabulous guest co-host, Tom Paulswith. Thanks again for making time, Tom. It is always a pleasure to speak with you these Thursday afternoons.
Yeah, my pleasure. And it was just a great to have Professor Franklin on. I mean, there's just so much going on. And, you know, to try to capture a moment in time through polling is very difficult. So glad he's doing what he's doing.
And the critical thing here, the takeaways that I have from this most recent poll is, one, what we have here, folks, is a battle over public opinion. At the end of the day, you know, there are federal courts and federal court judges that will do Donald Trump's bidding. We have at least four justices on the Supreme Court. And we'll talk more about this afternoon, likely.
Yes.
Who will simply do Donald Trump's bidding, who have no problem saying one thing out of one side of their mouth when it's not their preferred president, and a completely different legal analysis when it is their preferred president. To me, this all the outcome here will be about the people deciding, and Democrats are going to need to get really clear about their messaging. This is the moment that we're at. It's why I didn't like the waving of the signs and all the hooting and hollering at Donald Trump's address. It's not going to move the needle. You just look juvenile. But I want to get into, folks, today our three topics are going to be tariffs. We're going to talk about the whiplash that's going on with Ukraine policy. We may get into Social Security if we've got time. Of course, each and every one of you is welcome to join Tom and I in our discussion this afternoon, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Phone and text lines are open. But it is about public opinion, but one of the things that I feel pretty ticked off about, Tom, is that a lot of what Donald Trump is doing, he wasn't particularly clear about during the campaign. There were indications, the disavowal of Project 2025.
Right.
And yet here we are. And if we would have ever thought that, you know, a president would issue a cryptocurrency and receive, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, like, why wasn't he telling us he was going to do that during the campaign? And it seems that each day, the approach to these critically important issues is all over the place. I mean, just to refresh our recollection, in certain areas, declared we're going to defund that or we're not going to let that money flow. And then they reverse it. They fired some of the nuclear scientists and then hired them back. The five biggest cost savings from DOGE put up on the wall of receipts, which is no such thing. Then they get pulled down. The courts, he says that he can wipe away birthright citizenship. Courts say no. Every day it's back and forth. I'm a king, but maybe I'm not. We'll have an enemies list, but my appointees will say that they're going to be completely apolitical, but then they go after the FBI agents who were told to do the investigations. Back the blue, but we'll issue pardons to people who beat cops on January 6th. Yeah. I'll bring world peace on day one, but not actually. That's not really a thing. Of course, I'm going to make the middle class rich again. Everything's going to be fabulous. And now it's, well, there may be some pain and disruption, and you just hang in there with me. You know, we're going to end all foreign entanglements, but no, I'm going to engage ethnic cleansing in Gaza and start erecting hotels. It's just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I'm left with this. You didn't say that you were going to have no idea what the actual plan is. Like, you didn't tell people that every day your tariff policy would change. And I feel like it's a little bit of a bait and switch. And one of the biggest areas where I think this is a really disingenuous bait and switch is when it comes to veteran policy. And so I wanted to start today, Tom, by asking you about the news over the last 24 hours that Donald Trump is planning to fire 80,000 employees employees of the Veterans Administration. And I wanted to get your reaction and callers' reactions, especially because you're a vet. And callers, if you are a vet, please tell Calvin that when you give us a buzz, you will go to the top of the call line, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Are you a veteran? What do you think about Donald Trump firing 80,000 employees of the VA? And Tom, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, I guess before I jump in there, I want to go back to exactly what you were talking about, right? There's this chaos happening. And then there's the other stuff that's happening. And I do believe there is a plan, but Donald Trump is not running that plan. That plan is Project 2025. That plan is meant to shrink or eliminate as many parts of the government as possible, to decrease regulations, to decrease taxes, to decrease oversight. It's to strip the government of its assets and privatize as much as possible and move things back to the private market. That is the ultimate goal.
And there's a reason that so many things aren't governed by the capitalistic private sector, because public education shouldn't be a money-making, profit-seeking enterprise, right? And we could go through thing after thing, and there's...
Oh my goodness. We could spend 2 weeks on that.
On that very topic. When you talk about the chaos and he wasn't clear about what he wanted to do, we could go through the absurd things like renaming the Gulf of Mexico, but then you actually approach, you know, the seriousness of those issues, buying Greenland... Who's going to run the Panama Canal and threatening potential military action?
But the starting point is that project is underway and it will continue regardless of what Trump and Musk do. So I'm trying to separate what Trump and Musk are doing because they're the chaos. They're the ones creating the chaos that's keeping us from actually paying attention to the dismantling. And it's happening faster than we even think it is. So the chaos is because both of them act the exact same way, right? Musk, I mean, he's been accused of being on ketamine. It's, you know, he just comes across as somebody who they shoot first and ask questions later. Both of them are interested in breaking up the status quo. So whatever's working, they don't care if it's working or not. They're there to break it. And for Project 2025, it's better to have it broken than for it to be working correctly and then try to dismantle it, right? It's easier to dismantle things if they're already broken.
Yep.
And then the third part of this whole thing, which is really the key, is what are we actually paying attention to? And more importantly, what are going to be the consequences and the ramifications and when are they going to hit? Because people will not pay attention until their individual consequences reach their doorstep. When that Social Security check doesn't come, when Amazon takes over the USPS and suddenly there's no more rural post office, a whole bunch of things are in the works that are going to be slowly sliding and people aren't going to realize what's really happening. I mean, you saw it, 98% of Republicans love what Trump is doing until it impacts them.
Right.
And that's when we'll see that difference, right? Now, as a veteran, oh my goodness, right? Because there's, you know, we've had additional resources added to the Veterans Administration, Department of Veterans Affairs over the last 3 or 4 years, just because there are so many new veterans who went through wars.
Yes.
We are obligated. These people have sacrificed and we are obligated to take care of them. And what the current administration is saying is, well, that's not really true. So my thought, so the way I think about it is every time if you're out there and you find a vet and you see a vet and you say thank you for your service, you should also pick up the phone and call your congressperson and say, do not cut Veterans Affairs. Every time you thank someone for your service, you should be turning around and saying, let's protect that funding and let's make sure we take care of the people who fought for us.
Yeah, that is the point. Words are cheap. Standing, yes, behind veterans, ensuring that they have access to the world's best healthcare requires not taking a blowtorch or hatchet to 80,000 employees of the Veterans Administration. It's just crazy. And apparently, not too long ago, Donald Trump announced that DOGE is going to have meetings with cabinet secretaries every 2 weeks to discuss all of these cuts, and that the cuts will be a scalpel rather than a hatchet. 80,000 VA employees isn't a hatchet. I beg to disagree. Folks, join us. 855-752-4842. Veterans, go to the front of the caller line. Women, conservatives, we will also prioritize your calls. And first-time callers, of course, 855-752-4842. Kurt from Madison, who's a veteran, say hello to Tom. What are your thoughts this afternoon, Kurt?
Hi, Tom. I can tell you firsthand, given that I get my care from the VA here in Madison, but I also get it in Milwaukee. And both facilities are shorthanded. And and how do I know they're shorthanded? Because unfortunately, my health isn't as good as it should be, and I see multiple departments, and the schedulings are going way out there, much like you probably see in the civilian sector. But everybody I talk to in these VAs, they're always totally on top of their game. They always say, how are things going? You feel, you know, you're being treated the way you need to be treated. They give you a heads up saying, we're short staff, we're doing our best. So this is very, very discouraging. Not discouraging. It's maddening. It outrages me.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Kurt. Folks, you want to join us? 855-752-4842. I have two friends that work at the VA in Milwaukee. One is a psychiatrist that works there and has a specialization in PTSD. The other one is a primary care physician. I've been talking to him about this stuff the entire time. They're freaked out. They are shorthanded. The worst thing in the world, especially with the mental health crisis amongst many of our combat veterans, the idea that you're going to make someone wait to see a psychiatrist, to see a counselor, to get into group therapy will cost veteran lives.
Yes.
Let's keep going on the phones. Here we got Steve from Madison, also a veteran. Steve, thank you. And say hello to Tom. What are your thoughts this afternoon?
My thoughts are really upsetting. In the 1970s, through 1974 through 1984, a group of us in Madison started Vets House. And after 10 years, we finally convinced Congress to open 360 walk-in veteran centers throughout the country. And they're open today. But they may not be open because Trump is going to fire them all.
Mm.
That's just taking the benefits away from the veterans. And I'm a vet. Yep. I'm really pissed.
But yes.
I mean, how can you treat people like that? I mean, how can you treat Social Security like, oh, we'll get rid of Social Security. I'm on Social Security now. You know, I don't have a great pension. That's what keeps me alive.
May I ask you a question, Steve? I'm hearing from one of our conservative texters, Jeff from Superior, saying it's okay because it saves money. What's your reaction to Jeff's statement, Steve?
How does it save money if it kills people? I mean, how many suicides are there amongst veterans? How many of our seniors need health care? I mean, you take away money from us and it kills us. That's what it does.
Steve, thank you so very, very much. Jeff, your answer is, at what cost? At what cost of lives? Do our veterans' lives not matter because their service has ended? And I'll just add this, Jeff. I want to see the proof that it's saving money. Because here's the thing.
Yes.
Dismantling a lot of these programs and services is not going to result in a net savings. It is not going to spur economic growth, make our businesses stronger and our country more safe. It will end up costing you and me much more in the medium and long term, and maybe even the short term. This great discussion continues. We come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. Join us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a lively discussion underway here because here at Civic Media, we're all about real news and great conversation. I'm joined as my special guest co-host every Thursday by Tom Paulswitz, a Navy vet himself, a small business owner, and a two-time congressional candidate. You're welcome to join this discussion. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We kicked off this afternoon's discussion really talking about all of the chaos. And I think Donald Trump is doing a lot of things that he told no one he was going to do, right? And I think a lot of the cuts, it is easy to say, we need more government efficiency. We need to get rid of fraud and all of the... Those are very easy words to say out of your mouth. And frankly, I agree. I've worked in government. I've seen inefficiencies. I've fought to get rid of them. There's no question that those exist. The way to do that is not wholesale, massive, random cuts. You go through audit processes. You require what they call zeroed out budgeting, where you have to justify it. There's a lot of different ways to do this that actually will create maintainable, reasonable cost savings that won't cost Americans lives or require us to deny benefits to those that have earned them. Join our conversation, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Here's an example of that. And Tom and folks on the lines, I want to get your reaction to this. He's going to cut the employees of the IRS by it's tens of thousands. Every single one of those employees that get cut, benefits included, even though you're taking someone off the payroll, it will actually cost the United States more to fire that person because we will not be able to go after the rich billionaire tax cheats and the massive corporate tax cheats. It's literally cutting off your nose to spite your face, but make no mistake, they know that. They right. don't want their billionaire friends having to pay the taxes that they actually owe. And let's be very clear yeah. here. These are the taxes that they owe.
Yes. Not extra taxes. Yeah. And this is also about accountability, right? If you were yes. a CEO and you brought this to your shareholders as an initiative that you were doing, they would fire you. They would say, are you nuts? Because this will cost us far more than you're going to save. You do not know what you're doing. I do want to go back to the VA cuts for a minute, though.
Please.
Because I think there's a context here. And I have no proof of this, but my idea is that because they said they want to roll back the VA, the Veterans Affairs Group, to 2019 levels. And in 2022, there was a bipartisan law passed, the PAC Act, that expanded benefits for all veterans who had been exposed to toxic fumes or whatever overseas. And one of those was, part of it was Hunter Biden, or not Hunter Biden, Bo Biden was
Bo Biden.
One of those people who died because of this. So this is directly tied to Biden. And it's just another thing, I think, that Trump has decided, like, well, we're just going to go back and ignore the fact that benefits expanded. So we're just going to pretend like it never happened. Because those 80,000 people have been hired since then to take care of our veterans who need the help. And that bill, it was bipartisan, but it took an enormous lift to finally get it passed. Took years to get it passed.
It's fascinating, Tom, that you're making this comment that we're going to go to the phones. And folks, if we don't get to you, we will come back after the top of the hour. So please be patient with us. Our friend Jeff from Superior texted in on the text line in response to some of our discussion that there are fewer veterans today. So why can't we make these cuts? And I said, that's one metric to look at. The other metric is, what is it? Has the care requirements of our vets yes. changed? And where you see these kinds of toxic exposures that lead to significant neurological difficulties, any of our combat or even front forward serving troops that have deployed have serious PTSD. These are yes. chronic medical conditions that require much more complicated care across numerous specialties. This is part of why it's not just a simple calculation. Well, how many veterans are there? This is the kind of analysis where the right. simple belies actually the realities of what's happening on the ground. If it were as simple as X number of veterans means this many employees of the VA, I yeah. think we'd know what the formula is. But that's right. not actually how it's working.
Not how it works. Yes.
Folks, join us 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Lisa from Madison on the text line saying this. She's got a response for Jeff. How about we return the tax rate back to where it was post-World War II, and we'd have a couple more $1 trillion right there. That used to make society function. That's what a democracy does, Jeff. MT from Monona and the Grove. Start with D.C. and all of these six-figure Cadillac benefit plans for the members of Congress. Let's make them pay those back and see what they think now. Leave vets and seniors alone. That's a pretty potent line of argument. Let's see if we can get at least... Oh, Anne, I was going to go to you next. Sorry that we lost you. We're going to have to take care of a little bit of business, but Ollie from the Northwoods, Anne... You'll be next if you give us a buzz back. Jack from Merrimack and Mark from Prairie to Sac. We'll take all of your calls and thoughts so that each and every one of you can join this discussion with Tom Paulswitz this afternoon. I'm going to call him President Whiplash. Doesn't really have any idea what he's doing. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Stay on the phones, folks. We'll go to the text lines and phones more when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show Thursday edition. Back with more in just a moment.
The national news cycle never stops.
but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.